back in the day, this may surprise you, but I loved the video games. I was an arcade kid. I used to go to, my favorite arcade was over by the Century Mall, I remember. I don't know what it was called, but I just remember they had these great deals at certain hours for tokens. Remember the tokens? For a dollar, certain hours, you'd get 8 of them or something. And you could play all the games. You spent hours there. They were great. Great for parents, too, because you could drop kids there and just, like, say goodbye.
Like Dave and Buster's. And
well, that was even after me. But, yeah, right. They're great places. And they're, you know, they're just so much fun. Your kids play, Mayor?
Oh, my boys did. Yeah. I never got into them. You know, but my boys did. They had a lot of birthday parties, you know, with the games. And they had a good time.
Did they do them at home as well?
Video games?
Yeah. Were they big in...
Oh, yeah.
Nintendo
or
whatever.
Yeah, my Xbox, of course, is a big thing now. But they had the Nintendo. What was the other one? I don't know. There were so many, and they kept changing every year, so we had to keep buying up.
Yeah.
And the games are expensive. They were like $60 a piece.
And terribly addicted.
Yes.
Addictive, as I remember.
And you wanted to check them for violence, and you know.
I had to get rid of my Nintendo Game Boy in college because I was playing it too much. It was a real problem for me. Here's something that you may or may not know. Chicago doesn't have a big reputation as a video game hub, but in the 1990s, some of the most iconic arcade games, from Mortal Kombat to NBA Jam, were created by a local company called Midway Games. How about that? The documentary that is out right now about Midway Games, and one game in particular, Insert Coin, is by filmmaker Joshua Sway, and he's joining the show now. Josh, how you doing this Friday?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Were you a big, and obviously the documentarian, you care deeply about this issue. Were you a big arcade kid, or you're younger than that probably? So you were.
Oh, no. I was a huge arcade kid. I mean, that's what really inspired, a lot of the film was, I grew up in, as a kid in the 80s. And so I was, my brothers managed arcades out in the Los Angeles area. So I was living the dream, hanging out in an arcade all day.
What was your favorite game? Do you remember?
Oh, man. Back then, I would say, Defender or Robotron were probably my two favorite games, which ironically that the designer of those games was one of the main subjects of its coin.
How about that? I was Centipede, Mrs. Pac-Man, and then there was this game no one will remember, but it's Q-Bert. And I think it was big in Chicago. It was like a pyramid, and you had to bring your guy down and turn all the colors of the pyramid, and you couldn't fall off the pyramid. Remember that?
Ironically, Q-Bert was designed in Chicago.
Get out!
And, the co-creator of Q-Bert ended up working at Midway Games in the 90s. He's actually in the documentary also. And it's such a small industry, so, one person can make a very famous game and also have their fingers in a million other games also.
It's interesting because video games, as Mary was just stating, I mean, it's become bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a trillion dollar. I don't even know what to say, but during the lockdown and the pandemic, it's even become even bigger. Gaming is huge because now it's interactive. You can play and your friends, you can communicate with people in different countries or just your friend group or whatever it is. It has exploded, but it's fascinating to see that your documentary, what you focus on, is way back kind of then, that that Chicago was really instrumental in this whole thing.
Yeah, it's very strange how so many people who have lived in Chicago pretty much all their lives had no idea how many of these games were created in this town. And, the documentary talks about Midway Games, but before Midway was Midway in the 90s, there was a company called Williams Electronics. And, they were based out here in Chicago all the way back in the pinball days of the 1950s and 60s. And their competitors was Bally and Midway, two huge companies that were also in Chicago. They're almost like crosstown rivals. It's like, the Cubs and the Sox. And so they would compete against each other. But there were other companies such as Gottlieb and Stern that were doing pinballs. And, back in the day with what we call coin-op machines, these arcade games were all made in Chicago. They were, a lot of people think of them as being out in California, but Chicago really was the hub of arcade gaming.
And there weren't that many people working in the industry, as you explained. I mean, tell me about the highlights, some of the things that people will see in the documentary. I saw the article in the Tribune. It was a nice write-up that you got. What it's about.
Yeah, so what's about is, in the 1990s, it was really the last great era of video games. Many people may or may not know that, in the mid-80s, there was a huge video game crash. And so people got so sick of video games because there were so many of them, and most of them were of questionable quality. And so it kind of died down. And what ended up happening is around the very late 80s, I should say, arcade started to come back a little bit. And Midway in Chicago created a game called NARC. And it was just a crazy, over-the-top action game that nobody had ever attempted to make before for arcades. And so this came out, and it kickstarted this crazy wave of 90s video gaming, which was very realistic in nature, using actors to digitize into a computer, having crazy action, over-the-top humor, and a lot of violence. And most of it was humorous violence, but, it was all married together. And the arcade blew up in the 90s because of it. It became bigger than ever. You know, a game like NBA Jam made 3 times the amount of Jurassic Park that year. I mean, it just shows you how huge it was. And so the film covers that era. And it turns out, like, the team that made these games, such as Mortal Kombat and NBA Jam, they were all working in the back of a pinball factory at Midway Games in horrible conditions and making these games that ended up making everybody tons of money. But then later on, you know, the technology changes, people's taste in games changes, and they have to keep up with that.
Yeah, back in, you said pinball. Wow, and a pinball factory. Yeah. And you think about that was sort of the precursor to the video game, right? Because you were at the roller rinks and things like that, and you had the pinball machines, and then suddenly the arcade started.
Yeah, yeah. And pinball, you know, it's very strange because a lot of people forget about pinball, but pinball has always survived the ups and downs of gaming. And so video games kind of came and went, but pinball was always very popular. And it's ironic, even now it's even more popular than ever because people are buying pinball machines to put into their basements because they're all in quarantine. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And people play these games so much longer. And, before you had to go to an arcade, there were opening hours and closing hours and you had to get tokens and it was a little more, a little harder to do. And now you've got it right in your house, right? It's only your mom to tell you to stop playing. it's amazing. And they've adopted because of that, haven't they? I mean, you just see all the, the video games out there.
Yeah. So, back in the day, arcades were a great social hub for not just kids, but just, teenagers and younger adults to go to, so you got out of your house and you end up competing in games against total strangers and becoming friends with them and such. And, nowadays that's evolved into online play. And you look at games nowadays, people are playing online against each other in standard games, but, you look at a game, such as Fortnite, and, people think of it as a game, but it's really a digital social hub. People go on there to socialize with each other as much as they do to play games. Like, they have virtual concerts in these games now where people come, big name stars, they have a virtual version of themselves and they play live. And so, it's incredible to see all this technology. And again, because people are, wanting to stay at home more, that technology, gets better and better.
It's interesting. It's a fascinating way to say it, that they're digital social hubs, because you're right. They become so social. It's not about you and the machine just playing and trying to beat your high score. Back in the day with Atari, I got beat, or my sister's high score. Now it's incredibly social, right? Incredibly social. My nephew puts his headset on and he'll play and he's talking and I'm like, who's he talking to? What's going on? And that's how it is, right? It's a social experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and with kids now at home, they're so used to being in front of computers for Zoom for school, let's say. And so it's all coming together into one world.
Where do you think it's going? Do you have any sense of that? I mean, you're deep into this. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think this whole concept of the metaverse, which is like a universe that's within our own universe, it's pretty much what's going on now with these digital social hubs, I should say. And I think it's going to get bigger and bigger. You still have VR in its infancy. Everyone that's seen or read the book Ready Player One, right now, we have a version of VR, but that's just going to get better and better where people are more comfortable with it and it's not so heavy and cumbersome. And who knows, people might end up, in a bedroom where all the walls are video screens, and you can just sit and be immersed in a completely new environment if you wanted to.
I'm not ready for any of that. I'm going to go on the record just saying that. And I did read Ready Player One, where they live basically in a virtual world. They escape their existence to go and play out these characters in that virtual world. I'm sure people are doing it now, and you're probably right that there is some a big future in that. It's just, oh my gosh, I don't need any more screens in my life, Joshua. I mean, geez.
The hope is that the screens, they stop feeling like screens, right? I mean, you go into a room and it's just, it looks like regular walls, but they end up disappearing and you're immersed in a whole new space.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, to say the least. How do people go see your documentary? How can they experience it? What do we do?
Yeah, so right now, we're doing something really unique. People are not able to go to theaters, or many theaters are closed at the moment. And so what we've done is we partnered up with various theaters all around the country, doing what we're calling virtual cinemas. And we're primarily working with Alamo Drafthouse, with their system. And basically people can go on the website with Alamo Drafthouse On Demand and basically buy a ticket to the movie, and then they can stream it at home whenever they, whenever they feel like watching it. Here in Chicago, for instance, we partnered up with Facet Chicago, which is a great venue. They have, they're so great in terms of what kind of films they show, especially like some of the more art house type films. And so we partnered up with them. So people who love Facets, they can buy a ticket through their website. The proceeds, part of the proceeds go to Facets, and help support them, and they get to see, a brand new great film about video games and the history of them in the 90s, and particularly how they were made in Chicago and how they impacted the world.
It's so cool. It's an awesome project, and I'm going to check it out for sure, Joshua. I appreciate your time this Friday, okay? So have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
It's Joshua Sway there. His documentary is called Insert Coin. As you heard him just say, you go to Facet Chicago if you want to stream it at home.